Let me grab my notes real quick. I made notes today.
Oh, awesome.
I'm glad right
you
back.
Made notes.
Hey, buddy. You ready?
Rock and or roll, yes.
Let's talk about Superman.
Josh, Dan, and
Superman!
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here. You are part of the very extra special, extra shiny Red Cape event. This is the premiere episode of Josh, Dan, and Superman. This is a podcast all about Superman in the movies, in television, in comic books. I like it. We got background music, too. This is a, you know. Oh, what a good song.
You know it's playing in your heart.
Well, I'm Josh Paddock. I am joined by Dan, the man, Decker. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, man, we're here to talk about Superman, and this is like the first of many times we're going to get together and talk about Superman. So, yeah, I'm doing okay. It's fine.
You're happy, Dan.
Yeah. Come on, that's brother. Good. I mean, come on. Superman as an entity, as an empire, a singularity. He's a nexus being, to borrow from that other universe that we're not going to talk about a lot on this show. But you know, he exists through all time and all space and for all mankind and all existence. Superman. It's in the name.
He's mythological, man.
Yeah, you know? At this point, yeah. He's modern day Greek.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of our gods.
I'll agree. That's fair. Absolutely. Absolutely. And something, you know, we're going to get into a lot of it, but I still say something that we can all better ourselves to aspire to be a lot more like Clark Kent.
Absolutely. Just, you know, good guy all around. I think he even says in the film we're going to be reviewing today that he doesn't lie. Yeah. You know, yeah. You can trust the guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So speaking of, we're going to be talking about the 1978 motion picture, Superman the movie.
Superman the movie. The movie, important part of the title, actually, to me.
Yeah.
Very important.
It's I was thinking about it earlier today. It's pretty interesting that they decided to put the movie. You know, it's not the film. It's not, you know, anything else. It's the movie, man. Mm-hmm. We're going to sit down with some popcorn. We're going to see Superman on the big screen. I bet it was so exciting. Now, I wasn't alive when this came out, but I bet it was so exciting. Just like, oh my God, there's going to be a live action Superman.
I was alive. I know just because I've been told now. I don't have, and I do have memory from this time in my life. I mean, very early memories, but I would have been 3-ish years old. And so I know that just because I've been told that I was taken to see this movie, because that's how enwrapped of Superman that I was. And I don't have memory of not Superman, right? I don't have memories I don't have a sense of time that Superman isn't in it. Kind of like Star Trek. It's just been there my entire life. And so, yeah, to say, you know, little Dan was hype about this movie, I imagine that I was probably just climbing the walls insane.
I'm sure you were. And that was not a dig. I wasn't trying to call you old.
Me and Superman go way back to the beginning. I mean, that's nothing to be ashamed of at all. Not at all.
Now, I love the first movie, the movie we're talking about today. When I was younger, it was Superman 2 that was on like TBS every weekend. So mm-hmm. I always, you know, that was the one that stuck in my head. But going back and knowing what I know about the character now and rewatching this as an adult, it's just such a great movie.
It is.
And then it's right there in the title, you know. Well, it is a
and you brought that distinction, you know, and a movie is a popcorn, you know, event. You're there to enjoy something, maybe a little fantastical. It's all about the you know, you're going to see some sort of pulp, right? A little pop culture type thing. Versus a film, which gives it the artsy and the crafted side of things. But what we have here is we have a product, Superman the movie, which it is. Don't make any mistake. It's a popcorn, you know, popcorn movie. It's a popcorn event. But they also made a landmark film that still holds to today, right? I don't think it's possible to kind of iterate how transformative seeing these special effects were the way that it was done in this movie.
Well, it won an Academy Award for special effects. These sort of things you didn't really see, you know, these sort of things on the screen in the 70s. You know, the log line for the film was actually, "You will believe a man can fly." Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And you know, I'm sure these kids.
I bought in.
Yeah, hell yeah, man! Look at that.
Yeah, it and it. You know, we can talk a little bit about it. I've seen a few. I'm not sure if it was a documentary or not, but you know, some behind the scenes stuff about how the special effects were pioneered and engineered at the time to what you see in the camera or what you see on the screen is what they captured in the camera with the way that it was done in like this back projection system where they projected the aerial shots and then, you know, Chris is in front of that on the rigging. But the, you know, the choreography, the coordination of getting those aerial shots where it, you know, some places it feels a little forced, but there's, for the most part, it's well blended, you know, together that you don't really feel like it's, you know, out of sync. That's pretty fantastic. That took some planning or some very good maneuvering on Chris Reeves' part.
Yeah, and the special effects coordinator.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have his name written down here somewhere. Colin Chilvers was the guy's name. The problem they ran into, since we're talking about the special effects, we'll talk about this right now. They use blue screen. Mm-hmm. Most of the time,
right?
They use green screen today. They found it's just a better color to do all these special effects with. But they're using blue screen at the time, and Superman's suit was blue, so they couldn't shoot him against a blue screen. They couldn't figure out how to, you know, make the colors work and everything. So they came up with this front projection that you're talking about,
right?
Where basically they had a projector on the bottom of the camera shooting upwards into a mirror that then went into the camera. So the camera was actually, you know, recording what the projector was shooting into it. And they put Chris Reeves in front of it, and that's how they got that look, you know. So they could still light Chris Reeves however they wanted to. And the background was being basically projected into the camera. Mm-hmm. It's pretty genius if you think about it.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And you know, to that point, as you mentioned, and I think this shows how things went. You have, as you mentioned, you know, green screen wasn't the way it was done. It was a lot of blue screen back then. And or chroma key, if you will, mm-hmm. But you can see in the later films, Superman 3, Superman 4, when green screen became the norm and they didn't use this same technique to, and you get matte lines and, you know, weird animated after effects that weren't in this because there was no lines to matte out other than the wires, right? Big difference.
big, huge difference because, you know, that's one of the things that dates films of the 80s and early 90s is that green screen look, you know, and this film does, you know, it doesn't have it. And then to switch back to that, you know, with the later films, I don't know if we want to get into Superman 3 and 4. Those are, I kind of just forget those.
I don't have those in my canon.
Exactly.
Dear listeners, it isn't that I will entertain those films to entertain myself, but we'll cover this definitely as part of the show as we go on, but the canon here is Superman the movie, Superman 2 the Donner cut, and Superman Returns.
There you go.
That is how you and I, when we talk about this era of the Superman mythos, the 78 film canon, are those three films. And we'll, by the time we're done here, listeners, you'll know why. We don't have to lay all that out for you now. You know, back to the film at hand, Superman 1978. Do you start at the beginning? I mean, where do you start with this thing? It's just a masterpiece, top to bottom, side, left side, right side.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, we should start at the beginning. It was the first time that we had ever seen the origin story of Superman on the big screen. Of course, we've seen it, you know, a thousand times over now with the, you know, animated series and television shows and all the other movies that have come out. But this is the first time we saw Jor-El, you know, put his son in a spaceship and shoot him off to Earth. You got to think about it. It was kind of a gamble with this film because You don't see Superman in the suit until almost an hour in, and maybe a little bit more than an hour. They decided, you know, we're going to tell this story from the beginning. And, you know, you see Marlon Brando playing Zor-El, which it's funny because, you know, Chris Reeve wasn't really a big star at the time. Yeah,
he was
right?
not. He was a nobody.
Yeah, and Marlon Brando gets first billing on this.
And Gene Hackman. So it's Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman. I mean, I think even Ned Beatty is billed above Chris Reeve in this, which is just baffling. And then you get to Superman 2, and there's a little, you know, they made some adjustments.
So do you think that was like a studio thing where it's like, okay, we're gonna let you, you know, tell this origin story, but we need somebody to be Jor-El?
I you know, that was part of it, was the whole saga behind the scenes with the Saul Kinds is one thing, but they had to, you know, there wasn't a lot of Margot Kidder was not quite yet. She was known, but she was not quote draw star power type thing. They had to have that billable name, Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman. Those were the names on the hook. Chris brought was that look in the suit. You know, that was they're like, hey, you're going to see Superman. This is Superman. Marlon Brando's in the movie and Gene Hackman's in the movie, and you'll see Superman, you know? It was an interesting way to guarantee, I guess, that, you know, there was going to be some modicum of success with this, because this, hadn't been tried before. This kind of superhero movie hadn't been seen since the serials of the 40s for the most part, I think.
So I have to imagine the guy that misunderstood the marketing and saw Marlon Brando in a Superman, you know, saw the poster and was like, oh, I'll go see Marlon Brando as Superman. And he gets there and he's in like 15 minutes of the movie and he's sitting there cursing the thing the whole time.
What is this?
There's no internet, so he can't go back and, you know, complain online. He probably like wrote a letter to Universal and was like, "What the hell was this film?"
He has a Zod in the rings moment. I'll find you, Jor-El. I'll find your children.
So we see Zod for half a second in this film. He definitely shows up a lot more in two. One interesting thing I think about Zod in these two films and the casting by Donner is that Zod actually he looked like Terrence Stamp. Is that right?
Yeah.
He looked like him in the comic books from this movie on.
Right.
So before this movie, you know, he kind of had these like purple and pink flowy robe looking things and a different colored cape. And then after this film in the comics, they actually made it canon where that's where he had that black suit and had the goatee and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a pretty interesting little tidbit, too.
Well, and, you mentioned that's a couple of times now that you've kind of noted this being the fact that we get to see Supes's origin story on screen in any form for the first time. But it's easy to kind of miss how much of Superman lore is come forward from this film, up to and including that it is not just an S, it is the House of L now.
Yeah. Right?
That was this movie. Until this movie, it was an S. After that, it means hope. You know? And it's, I guess now, you know, since this is something that's been part of our entire lives, it's easy to kind of miss the fact that we're, you know, we've been through this from the halfway point now, I guess, you know, of Superman as a entity. And so for, you know, as much of now time as it was not, that's just been the way that it is. But to kind of, you know, put a pin in it that these, a lot of these things that we accept in just, that's just part of his story now came from this film.
Yeah. Well, it just goes to show you what an impact the film had, you know, it's huge. It changed, you know, canon. So what do you think about the kid that plays young Clark, not the little boy that
right.
raises the, but the teenager.
You know? The guy who's auditioning for the cover of Nirvana's album Nevermind versus the teenage guy. I feel bad for that kid because he's been ADR'd by Chris. and it's awkward. It's not his voice, and you know, I mean, it's very well done. It's well synced, but it's not his voice, and so I don't know what that actor sounds like.
This is why we're doing this. I just learned something. I didn't know that.
Yeah. If you go back and watch it, now you'll see it.
Yeah. See, I couldn't put my finger on it. I got something about the whole performance is just off to me.
Yep.
And that may be exactly what it is.
Yep. I mean, it's in the uncanny valley because it's so well done that you know it's Chris Reeve's voice, not whoever this guy is, poor fella, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But he has the look, you know. I buy him as a teenage version of Clark. One thing that we kind of miss, and it's hard now, it's kind of like the motion picture, Star Trek, the motion picture. There's so many versions of even Superman 78 that there are bits from parts that were on TV versus a director's cut versus the theatrical cut that I know there are parts of the story I've seen that weren't in what we watched to go over this show, like an extended scene on the train that he's racing against. We actually go inside the car and have a conversation, you know, and that little girl that's looking out the window is Lois Lane. Okay. And the actors who are playing her guardians are George Reeve and the actress who played Lois Lane from the 50s TV show. And so
no
I think
way.
That's
what a great little piece of,
yeah, and I think that's in the 3-hour TV edit that you can get. That's only available on, you can purchase it on Amazon Prime. But yeah, there's just little tidbits like that that are in there. And I had, when I was a kid, I had this book, you know, some movie magazine. Big movie got a magazine back in the day, and so I had this, and I mean, I had it forever. That I just poured over and read and read and read, that one for Superman and one for Superman 2. One of my early crushes was, was Ursa.
Yeah.
Yeah. That outfit answered a lot of questions.
Yeah. But that's cool, man. That's like I said, I did not know that it was Chris Reeve doing the voice, and I didn't know that George Reeves had a cameo. So,
yeah,
you know, we're all gonna learn stuff here, guys. We're all gonna learn stuff.
That's how much we love this thing.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of like in this story that Jonathan Kent kind of just has a heart attack in the middle of the field, and that's it. It's not over dramatic. I'm not saying that I like that he had a heart attack. I'm saying I like the writing.
Right. Yeah. And we'll touch on some points once you're done there. I think I know where I want to go with this.
Well, it's just that, you know, it's been done so many times in the comics and different movies and that sort of thing. And it's always this over dramatic thing. That's like this big moment in Clark's life where he has to make choices, and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, in Man of Steel, he has to choose not to save his dad, which I've always had a problem with. You know, this one is just kind of more realistic to me because that's probably how it would happen.
Well,
you know, he's working on the farm his whole life. That's probably how he's going to go out.
Well, Clark, and this is a moment that really, I mean, it hit me this on this time around when I was prepping for this, which, by the way, in the moment, you know, contemporary, then we talked about how this was Ben's first watch for this film. And that was a whole experience with me and my 10-year-old, which was just wonderful sideways through his eyes. And yeah, I don't know how many, what number was this? 800, 900 times I've seen this movie. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it always lands a little differently, and that's why I think that's why we go back so often to these things that we love, because, you know, we perspective, our lives change and those perspectives change and we gain new meaning from this. And Clark tells us why this is awful in this movie, when and you know, you see it happen and he's like, come on, dad, let's race. You know, you can still beat me or whatever. And he takes off to the barn and, you know, Jonathan tries. And what caught me is that how well acted it was. Like, you know, you can tell he's like, he reaches over to his left side and, you know, he's like, he feels it going numb and he's like, oh no, you know, and he has that moment. And then, you know, because of who Clark is, you know that he's already, as soon as he realizes that his dad had a heart attack, the guilt is because I asked him to race me, right?
Yeah.
It and then he says it at the funeral, all of these powers and I couldn't save him. That is more powerful, because he there was literally, even if Clark knew he was having a heart attack, there would be nothing he could do to stop it. Right.
Yeah.
He is on the verge of being Superman and he cannot save his father. That contrasts heavily with the moment in Man of Steel where Jonathan tells him not to save him and makes it draws all the weight out of that moment, because we all know, you know, there's no reason Superman couldn't, and make it not look like he just did. I mean, Jonathan's always been here. What do you get? Because like he moves at twice the speed of sound. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And I mean, in Man of Steel, it was like, what, are there like maybe 12 people under that underpass? I mean, you can't, it's not like there were, you know, reporters and cameras on
them. Probably, you know? Concerned with not dying in a tornado more than whether or not they saw a man fly.
Exactly.
But yeah, that but hit no. me so hard this time around was like, it just, you can hear he's crushed by it, and that motivates the entire need for the Fortress of Solitude.
Yep, I totally agree with you. You know, I hadn't put it into those words or that thought, but you're absolutely right. It just that is worse, that he couldn't do anything to save him, you know, even with all of his powers. It's perfect.
It's well, perfect. And I think you know, I've often thought, and I kind of thought about it this time more too. What is it about this moment that causes the crystal to call out to him? Because, you know, is it the absence of Jonathan that allows him to finally sense something else? Because, you know, does the crystal just know? That's what fascinates me, is like these two things are drawn together to motivate this story. But, you know, it leaves questions that aren't necessarily answered, and I'm okay with that. But it's like, it's almost like, you know, Clark needs the crystal and the crystal needs Clark. And it just kind of lines up at that moment.
That's what I've always thought. You know, I mean, they don't give us a real crystal clear answer like the crystal does, but, you know, it's the absence of a father figure. And I think that the crystal knows that, you know, I kind of, in my little head canon, it was giving Jonathan the opportunity to raise Clark as one of them, you know?
Yeah.
And then as soon as that wasn't there, it's like, well, hey, buddy, listen, everything's going to be all right. Because, you know, we got this holographic dad that's going to take care of you now.
You know, that brings up an interesting question for me that I hadn't considered before. You know, being as advanced as Kryptonian society was, would Jor-El have been prescient enough to choose Jonathan and Martha? Do you think he could see? I mean, we know that the amount of time between the destruction of Krypton and this Superman landing on Earth is vast. He says it's something on the order of thousands of years. You know, Superman doesn't experience that time. Obviously, they have some sort of relativistic faster than light travel because it only takes him 3 years to get here, relative, but eons have passed since his planet was destroyed. And so I just wonder, you know, I don't think as well prepared as Jor-El and Laura were, that they would leave something like what they expect, you know, Cal to be up to chance.
It's an interesting thought. I've never really thought about it that way. I kind of think it was just last ditch effort, man.
Yeah.
You know, the planet's going up. Let's give him the only chance that he might have, you know.
The only chance any of them have, honestly.
Yeah. But no, it's a cool thought. You know, it's definitely... You know, and if that works for your headcanon, man, then go with it. I like it.
Well, he definitely knows enough about Earth to be, it's part of the education. It's part of the AV story we get in the capsule with Baby Superman. You know, he talks about this stuff. And if you haven't ever paid attention, dear listeners, to the audio in that, it's kind of easy to get lost in it. But listen to what Jor-El says. It's fascinating stuff.
I'm going to have to go back and listen now because you've piqued my interest. I'm going to see if I missed something. But then that kind of throws everything that happened in Red Sun out the window. Because
that's
true. Like, so, there was like a, you know, 8-hour time difference.
That's true. It's true. You know, you give it 60,000 years, give him a time zone or two.
Didn't carry the four.
Hey, that's foreshadow. Yeah, right. That's how, you know, that time we slammed a probe into Mars because we didn't convert the jewels. But
so then the Fortress of Solitude, man. We finally get to see it on the big screen. It's really cool in this movie.
It is very cool in this movie, and I think speaking of something that's kind of set the tone going forward for our idea of what the Fortress of Solitude is, you know, there's been in tons of iterations of the Fortress through in the comics over the years, but the main visual representation in film or television media has basically adopted this interlaced crystalline form that we get here, which I've always thought was beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool. They should be really proud of it. I'm sure they are. The set design and everything is just it's just perfect. You know, the just the whole look of it, and you know, it looks like it's freezing, and it's just, you know, the little crystals and you know, putting them in the little holes, and the whole thing works for me. I just think it as a kid, I remember just being completely
I bought the whole thing. Oh yeah, that was the coolest place ever. I wanted to visit. And I always thought like the crystals were like a city. I always thought of the way that it almost looks like a small pipe organ, but I always thought of it as like a city on Krypton. You know, it's like a diorama, I guess, would be the way. That was the way I thought of it laid out before Superman. And every time he laid a crystal in and got a new story or whatever, it's like, oh, he's going to move that into the other building of the city.
You know the toy that everybody had when they were a kid that had the little... the holes, there was one that was a square and one that was a circle and one was a triangle and one was
a square,
and you had the little things that you put in it.
I
remember thinking when I was little and watching this movie, I was like, I've got one of those. I would be really good at this.
It's my shape shorter, no big deal. I mean, essentially, it is his shape sorter. That's what he uses to go through school, you know? It is an educational device.
Apparently, I was using mine wrong, though, because I never got a holographic dad out of it.
That's true. No. It's true. No holographic dad who had a really cool wispy in his hair, you know?
Yeah.
That's Superman. He had to copy that and get the little curl.
Yeah. You know? But after Clark gets his little education there, I said earlier that we didn't see him in the suit until about an hour into the movie, but now I'm correcting myself because we do see him for just a split second when he flies out of
the
Solitude. He's in the suit.
And so that moment is incredible because that's all wire work in the studio. And so every bit, I mean, literally the first time you see the man fly, he's flying right at the camera. And I think, you know, in the economy of storytelling, they set that tone. You bought it already, right?
Yeah.
Every time you see him fly again, you're already bought in. You're not questioning what your eyes are telling you. You're just absorbing it because the first time you see it happen, there was no reason to disbelieve it.
Yeah.
You know, it just, and the way, I mean, it's even down to the way the cape flutters just so, and you don't get this even still in modern special effects, Superman effects. You just don't get the presence that this has, that moment has. It's just, you know, there's no weight in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's real.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we don't see the wires because they're, you know, they're gone. But I mean, he really was flying towards the camera.
Yeah.
And no matter, you know, how much special effects and green screen and everything you throw at it, you can't change that fact. I mean, they actually filmed him flying at the camera, and that's why it looks good. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, you know. Then we wrap up the origin story pretty much, and we get plopped down in Metropolis, and it's Clark Kent's first day at the Daily Planet.
Oh, it's so great. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
There's so many, it's so nuanced. And that has always been the thing with Chris in this role is Clark. Clark is the key to Superman. We all know that. Okay, well, maybe you don't know that. If this is your first introduction to Superman, I should not assume that all of our listeners know who Superman is. Yes, Clark is the key to Superman. Superman is, believe it or not, Superman is the costume, and you know, more like Superman's the secret identity, and Clark is the real hero. But you know, that's philosophy. But yeah, it's. Oh, what a great introduction.
Oh, I love it, man. I love everything about it. I love Jimmy. I love, you know, finally to get to see Margot Kidder as Lois Lane. She's a terrible speller throughout the whole movie. It's little gags they do where she never seemed to spell.
Now, was that a thing with Lois before this movie, or is that something else they've added to it? Because I love the irony that, you know, a several times over Pulitzer Prize winning author, you know, newspaper reporter is the world's worst speller.
Yeah. I do think that's just Margot Kidder's, you know, representation of the character. I don't think Lois is known as a terrible speller outside of the Donnerverse.
Well.
I could be wrong.
It plays well.
It really does. But, you know, it's before spell check. So
that's true.
You know, they're all
sitting there
typing this out on typewriters. So.
Can you imagine fast forward a few years and you've got Clippy Miss Lane, I have no idea what you're trying to do. Oh,
but you know, we get to see we can see Clark's first day. Do you think Clark is actually nervous, or is that a gag that he's playing? Do you think there's part of Clark Kent that is actually nervous to start this job?
Oh, I think so.
I've always thought that it's not just a complete act with him. I mean, this is him kind of moving forward with his life, you know?
Well, and because that's the part that he, you know, he's obviously hamming it up, as one does with their comfortable attributes when one is nervous, right?
Yeah.
You crank up the things that you like about yourself when you're nervous, in an attempt to impress someone. And so, yeah, you know, the humble aw shucks, you know, I mean, the man before he even, you know, gets completely out of the office for the first time, he's asking to make sure half his check gets sent home to his mom.
Yeah, you know? That's something I wrote down in my notes.
That's Clark Kent, man. So, I think he's probably actually that nervous because he hasn't even, you know, had the chance to be confident in Superman yet. You know,
yeah.
We see that later, but yeah, I think there's a good bit of like first day jitters for both halves of his psyche.
For sure. It's funny you mentioned that about the sending the paycheck home. Like I said, it's one of the things I had in my notes because Lois thinks it's a joke. She's yeah. like, "Oh, what? Let me guess. You're sending it home to your white-haired mother." And he's like, "Well, actually, yeah." It just shows you. It's like this. Clark Kent's so pure. He's like, of course he's going to send half his paycheck to his mother. You know.
Let's talk about being able to support yourself in Metropolis on half of what a reporter would make in the 1970s.
Exactly.
Metropolis, which looks suspiciously like New York City, but we don't talk about that.
They say that Jimmy's making $40 a week.
Yeah, I know. You know? Which is very close to accurate. If he would be making about that at that time, probably for a part-time job, because around 1980 minimum wage was $2.13 an hour, and so a full-time job would net you about $85, and that was not to get too deep into it, that was enough for a single parent to afford a car and buy a house and feed a child. Compared to $85, that's before taxes. I probably use more toilet paper than that a month these days,
and
definitely not raising a kid and paying for a house off of it. But anyway, it's funny you mentioned that. Circling back, this is just all proof is reason why we're doing a show. I noted that. I was like $40, and I did the math real quick, and I was like, that'd be about average. That'd be about right, you know. He seemed happy for it.
His little bow tie and his little camera. He always has the camera around his neck.
Yep.
Always. Yep. I noticed, I told you a couple days ago, I had watched Supergirl and he has a little cameo. In
yep.
That. And he even has the little, he's got the he's camera, got his camera around his yep. neck. Yeah. I mean, he's just yep. having lunch and he is ready. Shows you how devoted Jimmy Wait, Olsen
is. We got with time out. Are we gonna do the Supergirl movie at some point?
I mean, you know, we'll see.
You know, Helen Slater, time in.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing about the Supergirl movie is I didn't actually finish it because I couldn't handle it.
Oh man, it's real bad.
After the scene that I'm talking about that Jimmy Olsen has his little cameo in, I was like, I'm out, man. This is just terrible.
It's, you know, you have to, man, I was, 8 or 9 when it came out. And so, yeah, I was enamored of it because it was part of the Superman. Yeah, it's just like I waited until I was well into an adult to watch Quest for Peace, and I regret making up for that. I should have just let that one stay where it was.
It was good up here.
Yeah, it's good. Just let it be. You know? Yeah. And anyway, that's not the movie we're talking about. Talking about one of the greatest movies ever made.
And then basically where we go from there is Clark basically showing the audience his powers for the first time. It's the mugger. In the alleyway,
yes,
you know, where he catches the bullet real quick. Hey, what's up, Suits? But I thought that was, you know, even in the face of danger, you know, he's doing the whole, like, he's keeping the secret identity. He is Clark Kent,
and he played it very Clark-esque. He faints faints.
Yeah.
And Lois almost fainted. He's just enough milk toast that she isn't gonna let him die. But she's definitely questioning whether or not
what are we doing here?
Yeah. one of the things, from that magazine I noted earlier, one of the things that they pointed out in that magazine relative to that scene is that there was a pain from one of the older comics where he basically kind of does the same thing. Lois comes in, one of her many schemes to find out. And this plays out again further down in the Donner Cut of Superman 2. But she basically pulls a gun on him and she's like, I'm going to shoot you and you're going to be Superman and that's going to be the way it is. And but in the comic panel, he's in his at his desk in his chair. There's a window behind him. And so he speed does a little with his fingers on the, grabs the bullets and on the window to make bullet holes in the pane behind him, and then they show that's like inspired this, and I was like, well, even then, they're tapping into what had come before to make if you borrow from that comic book source, you get that comic book feel, and this scene has a very comic book feel to it.
Oh, it definitely does. I mean, they're walking down the street, and all you see at first is the gun stick out from the alleyway. They had every chance in the world to get out of this situation. All they had to do was just keep walking.
Lois, I think we better do what he says.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to wonder, what are you thinking, dude? Maybe he wanted to show off, Maybe he was like, I'm gonna get us in here. I'm gonna get us in a little pickle, and I'm gonna get us out. It's gonna be great. But he decides to keep the whole secret identity going. He almost slips up when he tells her the exact contents of her purse.
Random
one. It's like a lipstick and this blah blah blah. It's just a random guess. But I thought about that this watch. If you were Lois, don't you think that would kind of freak you out?
To be that accurate? If she weren't as, I don't want to use the word scatterbrained, but she's very, frantic, frenetic. If she were not as frenetic, I don't think that she would have paid more attention to that if she wasn't just bouncing all over the place.
You're right.
Lois is obviously very ADD. She smokes and she has coffee, and obviously back in the 70s, she wasn't taking enough lewds, man. one bit about that is damn it all, if Chris doesn't almost wink at the camera afterwards, though, it's like a 7/8 wink at the camera. He's not quite, but it's for you. It's for you, the audience. He's like,
what are you going to do? Yeah.
But that's just the purity of Chris Reeve as Clark Kent. It's just, that is stunt casting for eternity.
Yeah. One of the things about the way he portrays the character, he's 6'4", and I think he actually says in the film when he's Superman that he's 6'4". He said when he was trying to play Clark, he would try to make himself look 6'1".
Yeah,
and I think that's really cool. Yeah, I think that's a really cool little tidbit.
It is. Well, and it's one of the things, if that's where Brandon Routh comes along later, is because he nails the same characterization of Clark Kent that Chris gives us. But if you watch him, he does. He hunches, instead of broad back shoulders, he brings his shoulders forward. He puts his head down. He kind of does, a little turtle thing. And, he's not quite like this, but, he carries things at his solar plexus, very timid and into the, and it's not, what I'm trying to say, y'all, is it's not just the glasses and the haircut that disguise Superman as Clark Kent. He puts on an effect that, you wouldn't It's kind of like, you look like Superman, but you would never believe he's Superman because he does not carry himself as Superman. There's more to the disguise. And yeah, you know, I mean, there's a whole suspension of disbelief, but there's more to the disguise than just glasses and a haircut. So, but yeah, he gets that so well there in the way he just brings it on down.
Well, I think it's, to me, it's more believable that Clark Kent could get away with, disguising himself in the time period that the movie's in. You know, this is before smartphones. This cameras everywhere. You know, every person has a camera. You're going to see Superman fly above you, you know, at the top of these skyscrapers. You're not going to get a good look at the guy. You know, it makes sense to me that he could hide in plain sight,
right?
In the time period. These days, it's a little bit more like, I don't know, man. Every kid's got a smartphone. Eventually, they're going to get a good picture of him and zoom in on him. Yeah.
Well, you know, and it would have saved that. It would have saved that poor young girl from getting smacked around by her parents. That's one part of the film that has not aged well. The little girl's kitty cat gets saved. We'll get to that because we're about to get to what leads to that. As you noted, this afternoon that we're talking about in the alley is the first demonstration out in the open of his powers. We've seen him run fast, and that's about it. We've seen him fly from the fortress, but we haven't seen him do any daring acts of daring deeds. And even here, it goes unrecognized. But
well, before we get to the part you're talking about, we've got it. You know, we get introduced to Lex Luthor and Otis.
Oh my God. Oh my God. The detectives, man, or that one detective, that scene is gruesome.
Is brutally murdered. I mean, he brutally murders this guy.
This was a G-rated movie. This was a G-rated movie.
Yeah, and they just push him out murked. He's just pushed out in front of the train, man. I mean, you know. And
No, but it's all, you don't have, yeah. His hat is flipping around in the third rail after it's all said and done. You don't need to see that.
He is completely mangled.
His friends come along and he's like,
What I never understood and this is just, you know, me watching the movie and going, hey, wait a minute. Why didn't they send another detective to kind of check that door out?
Yeah.
They just kind of left it there. It's like, oh. Don't go near that door, guys.
Exactly. You know, what I heard about? Don't go to that door. That's what I heard about.
That's a bad door.
That's it, fellas. Yeah. That's why Metropolis needs Superman, because the cops don't finish solving crimes. They're like, well, talk about those radios those guys have, though. They're like the big old Beastie Boys sabotage style, you know.
Yeah.
You just know somebody on the other end of that is getting their badge and their gun handed over to the chief on the on the desk, you know, getting dressed down for being a bad cop.
Then we get to see Lex's lair. Which I always thought was great.
His reasoning for being there too is infallible.
It makes perfect sense. You know what they're paying up there?
Yeah, and look what I have given you, Miss Tessmacher. Oh, Miss Tessmacher.
Yeah, I have to say that's another one.
Although, you know, later on she does rob Superman of his body autonomy. I'm not sure that he really was upset, but you know, she does take advantage of him in a position when she shouldn't have, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, she totally stole a kiss, man.
8-year-old me would have let it happen.
I was just gonna say, if I happen to save Superman in a pool, I'm not gonna leave that one out there.
Let's celebrate by the first by celebrating the fact that we live in a world where Superman exists. His reasoning was perfect.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, up there they're paying out the ass basically for what we have down here.
You know, Thundercat had a decked out home theater before that was even a thing you could have. His library. Otis is great. Mr. Luthor.
Yeah, Mr. Luthor.
With the Luthor.
And I love that every time. I love his music. It's like boom, 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 boom. You know, it's just like
it's diddle doddle music. Yeah, oh, it's perfect. Yeah. And but Lex is so he's just so methodical. He's not really even evil. He's just, you know, these are better choices, obviously.
He's a little evil.
He's sociopathic. That's the difference. I don't know. I don't know. Does one lead to evil?
His major plan is to shoot, you know, rocket bombs to the West Coast.
But one of them's going to the East Coast. But what are, you know, a few million people amongst friends when it comes to real estate?
I'm just saying, I think your definition of evil and my definition of evil might be a little different. But we get introduced to Lex and you know, Gene Hackman is just awesome in this role. I think it's great that throughout this whole movie, we see him in a bunch of different wigs, you know, because obviously the character has always been written as a bald man. And we see him in all these different elaborate wigs and we don't get to see it till the end of the movie, you know, where they take his wig off
for
his
Gene did not want to shave his head, nor did he want to wear a skull cap. So that's the story of all the wigs, is that he did not want to shave his head for the role, and he didn't want to go through the entire production wearing a skull cap. So he just wore ridiculous wigs.
So for that scene that we do see him at the prison, is that a
skull cap? That's a skull cap. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to watch next time.
Yeah, they don't give a good close up. Now I don't know if it was the same because he goes back once they have the breakout in Superman 2. He goes back to having the wigs again. He doesn't stay bald for that whole. But that was like Gene Hackman being like, no,
no, no, we're not shaving my head. Sorry, because that's pretty much the only time you see him bald is in the prison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, makes sense. And all that stuff was shot at the same time. The original plan was to shoot both these movies back to back, but then Donner got fired in the middle of the second one, which is a whole nother story.
We gotta have an entire podcast about that story. Aside from the movies.
Then we get to the helicopter scene that you're talking about, and we finally get to see Superman. Because of the negligence of the worst helicopter pilot in the world. I never understood that when the wire catches the helicopter, why he just didn't set it down.
We'll just keep going. It's fine. Yeah. So what's up is Lois is taking a helicopter from the top of the Daily Planet to, ostensibly JFK, where the president is landing in Air Force One. And so that plays later on into what else happened. So Superman is key to two sides of this coin. Clark is still in the building as it starts to happen, and doesn't understand that there's something amiss till he gets down to street level. And someone points it out. And then we get the great gag where it's not a phone booth, but it's just a pay phone. And I mean, I love it. He looks at the receiver like it's going to, like it matters. Like,
hell am I supposed to do with this thing? You know?
And then we get the magical trope of the revolving door.
The revolving door. It apparently he can just kind of snap his fingers and change his clothes. I mean, he does do the whole thing where he opens up his shirt and you see the S, but then all those just kind of disappear.
Yeah. Superman's cape has a pocket dimension was what my, I wouldn't say that it has a pocket dimension, but in my, as a child, that was my explanation, was that his cape had a pocket that he put his clothes in.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, The Flash has a ring that keeps his suit in it, so why can't
like a real pocket dimension in his ring that he keeps his suit in, right? We're talking about a flying alien from another planet, so things can get a little iffy around how it works. He ends up being Superman.
Yeah. One of my favorite parts of this whole movie, actually, is after he changes into Superman, is the guy on the street that sees him, and he's like, "Hey, Jim, it's a bad outfit."
Yeah. Whoa. Because it is, and it still is. Oh.
Yeah.
You know, even Noah, who, has grown up in more of the modern era of Superman, his probably his biggest impression of Superman would be still this film, but the animated version and the Justice League version, the animated Justice League version, and his first Superman film in the theater was Man of Steel, he had seen Superman Returns, and he is a champion for the trunks. He does not like the current suit because it lacks trunks.
Really? And
I kind of agree. Yeah. Like, it's a, I don't know if we could go full trunk, but there is, there's something about that, that demarcation it doesn't look ridiculous in this film. Somehow it does not look ridiculous.
No, I mean, he pulls it off great. Now, yeah. I have to say, I do like the new
understated.
I'm not a big fan of the trunks. I know that Chris Reeve definitely pulls it off, and when I see Superman in the trunks, either in the films or in the comic books, I do appreciate it. I love it, but I like the way he looks without him. That's just me, though.
But we get one of the greatest, I think one of the greatest superhero movie lines maybe ever, with Lois eventually ends up over the side of the Daily Planet and she's fallen. Great screams, by the way. I think we get one long scream and then we actually have to inhale and take another breath and we get another scream.
Yeah.
He catches her and he's like, "Don't worry, miss, I've got you."
"You've got me? Who's got you?"
Oh, it's so great. That gets me every time still. It's and again, the way it's filmed, it looks like they're flying up the side of the building and it's totally believable. And then the quip with statistically speaking, flying is still the safest way to travel.
Yeah, that is a great little bite. Like, he's like, "Well, I just want to let you know, it's statistically speaking, it is. It's a great, it's a Superman thing to say."
Yep.
I mean, it is just, it's perfect. And then we get this kind of do-gooder montage where I guess he, he feels like, "Well, I saved one person, I can go."
Well, I'm dressed.
Yeah, exactly. I went to the trouble of putting the suit on. I might as well save a couple.
So, and I can't remember who all he visits, but we do get to the point where Air Force One is coming in to the city and it's struck by lightning. They lose an engine. Superman ends up being the engine, and a great little bit with the, "Don't look, just fly."
Yeah, just fly. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's something.
It's something. And the way that is said is that there, you can just hear it in your head too. And then Superman out the window and he's just.
Yeah. Now, I like the scene and I like, the little, he does the little hand wave and everything. And it's very, very Superman. I've always hated that line that the pilot gives, though.
Oh, yeah, no, I'd be like, "Get a load of this shit."
Yeah, I know. But I mean, flying. Like the co-pilot, he tells the co-pilot not to look. I'm like, "No, screw you."
But then,
the
navigator and the comms officer are both looking out the window. If I were the co-pilot, I'd be like, "Man, screw you. What is it?"
Yeah. "What's up, guys? What are you leaving me out for? What do you mean, don't look?"
Rude. Rude. That guy gets he needs a special visit from Superman.
But then he saves the cat in the tree. Didn't you have something to say about?
Yeah, everything? So he saves the cat in the tree, and the little girl's out there trying to get her cat to come down, climbed up the tree and want to come in. And the mom's mad because the girl's outside. And Superman comes by and he, on his way down, he's like, oh, hi, kitty. And he hands the cat to the girl, and the girl goes inside, and she's like, Mom, a flying man gave me my cat. And the girl gets a smack, a couple of smacks for lying. And I'm like, damn, you know, and surely Superman heard that. I mean, because he's Superman.
Yeah. And you like, think he would have turned around.
Yeah, it'd have been like, whoa. But no, you know, child abuse. That's, you know. You saved the girl's cat so that she could take an ass whooping by her mom.
I know that this is going to be a weird little segue, but I know you know the film Tombstone. You know when he gets to Tombstone and the guy's hitting the horse and he grabs it from hits the guy over the head with it and it's like, hurts, don't it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you love it if we had that little scene in Superman that turns around, slaps the bomb, hurts, don't it? I don't know. It's probably, you know, a bad idea.
Oh, that's funny, though. No, I'll accept that. But yeah, when I didn't pay much mind to it when I was younger, but as a older these days and a parent, I'm like, even if your kid's lying, do you hit them? No, you don't hit them.
Is the first thing you go to smacking them upside the head? I feel bad for this girl.
Yeah, this kid. She's never gonna, she is gonna grow up. That's how you grow supervillains. She's gonna grow up with a grudge against Superman for saving a cat. Yeah. Future Cheetah. That's who it is.
Yeah.
That's who it is. That's who that was. Future Cheetah.
So for me, I guess the next like relevant scene is the date with Superman.
My date with Superman. That article lives in canon forever. There's a lot of like. And this whole scene gets homaged and replayed in Batman 89 when Bruce goes to meet Vicky. But the whole, you know, do I tell you who I am? To maybe make it less awkward. But he's a little late, right? He arrives a little bit late. Yeah. And
yeah, I think
like 5 minutes or something.
Lois is sitting there and she kind of feels like a little bit of an idiot. Like, why did I think this guy was going to come? You know, she's all dressed up and looking nice and everything, which that's my one quip with this movie is like, I mean, it's the first thing she does is ask if you know, when she finds out that he has X-ray vision, the first thing she asks is what color are my panties?
Yeah.
Come on, Lois. You're a professional
here. You know, 6'4" Chris Reeve standing in front of you. you can see, huh?
I don't know. I think Lois needs to get her mind out of the gutter and, you know, get to work here.
It pays off. It pays off in the best possible way because I don't think she's not expecting. We as the audience aren't expecting it because it's kind of a throwaway line. You're like, that's Superman. He wouldn't look at her panties anyway. And then like she moves just then the right way and he goes blue.
Oh, pink.
Right. Yeah, pink. Yeah. He just says it like it's completely out of context.
Yeah. But, you know, as far as the story goes, it does move the story along a little bit because he initially can't see her panties because she's standing behind a lead planter or something. So we learn that he can't see through lead.
This is a contrast to modern storytelling that I just want to point out. This is something that Superman can't see through lead. Because I guess X-rays don't go through lead. That's a thing. We all know that. When you gotta wear your little, you know, everybody leaves the room but you, and you get a, you know, you get a thin little paper lead jacket when you get your X-rays made. Oh, everything's fine. Well, why are you all leaving? I think modern storytelling would take the shortcut of the exposition. Well, as you know, Superman can't see through lead. This is an organic way for Lois by proxy to audience, for all of us to learn this. And if it's your first introduction ever to Superman, you just learned a key part of the mythos that's going to pay off later down the line in a big way. And it was done as part of, you know, storytelling and not exposition. Those are different things, by the way. You can exposit through storytelling, but exposition is not storytelling.
but
you know, that's something that they would just you know, they would beat you with it these days rather than, oh, hey, wow, you know, we learned that together.
Yeah, find an interesting way to let the character discover this and the audience as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I agree with you totally 100%. These comic book movies, especially these days, I mean, it's just kind of every one of them follows kind of the same cookie cutter, you know, hit you over the head with it, like you said.
Well, I'm just thinking about it, you know, like trying to think about the things that we learn about Superman's abilities in this movie, in ways that aren't, you know, so overt. And, you know, even going back to the beginning before he was launched, you know, Laura, as his mother, is expressing concern, and that's where Jor-El, their son, their yellow son, will energize his cells with this power. And, you know, oh, okay. And if you're not paying attention, it doesn't ever come up again. But if you are paying attention, you learn then and there that Superman's powers on Earth are derived from the fact that he lives under a yellow sun. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, how does that work? That doesn't matter. Mitochondria.
Don't you worry about that.
Y'all, mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cell. We all know this, okay? He's got Superman mitochondria. That's all the difference is.
But then...
Kryptonian biology with Dr. Decker.
Yeah. But then we get into the poem. And the flying poem.
Okay. So I was... Okay. Oh, God.
You can't explain this one away. There's no reason for it other than it was still the 70s. So, of course, there was a spoken word poem in the middle of the
superhero. We have to walk this out. Oh, the spoken word. Because, yeah, man, have you ever heard William Shatner, Lucy in the Sky with diamonds? Spoken word was a real thing. Can you imagine a couple things? Imagine John Williams, Johnny Williams, as he was credited on the theme for Lost in Space back in the day. But imagine John Williams. We need a little betting music for a poem about flying.
I'm sorry, a what?
We're gonna need some betting music. Anyway.
No. For a poem?
A poem. That's right, a poem. But I had this soundtrack on LP. Okay, as a wee child, 7, 8 years old, because it had Superman on it, and that was, mom was like, you can buy a record, and I was like, that one? Yeah. And she's like, you're not gonna want it, it doesn't have words, and I'm like, Superman.
And
so I had the orchestral orchestral recording of the Superman soundtrack, a double LP, man, it's big old record. But this was on there. Can you read my mind?
Can you read my mind?
Is the name. Now, knowing it was coming, bracing myself for the oncoming horror of it. I think I found myself more open-minded to it this time around.
Yeah.
And I kind of framed it to, you know, a lot of things are going on in that scene. Like, okay, like, does Superman have an aura of protection? Is he in some sort of Superman warp bubble field? Because they're like woody doody doo, still flying, you know. Yeah. I mean, and it's, I guess it's on one level to show like a sense of freedom and a sense of strength, and but more than that, you know, what I was thinking to myself was, the hell would I be thinking about when I was flying with Superman? And so I cut her some slack, you know.
I don't know.
And then too, in the sense that they're trying to build, they have to very quickly establish that there is chemistry here, right? You know, Lois is, who wouldn't fall in love with Superman? But Superman is smitten as well. What Lois doesn't know is that Clark is smitten, and he just happens to be there as Superman right now. So how else do we fill that time, I guess, is the question. I mean, us as the audience, we would be complaining, I think, that, you know, that part in the movie where they're flying and they don't say shit? So, you know, I mean, you know, that's the other side of this.
I mean, it's a beautiful score.
Yeah.
You know, we could just kind of focus on the music
yeah.
and fly around a little bit. I think I'm on the side where we could do it without a poem.
I'm sure there's a a poem edit, you know, and then there would be a whole restore the poem edit.
Restore the poem edit.
Yeah, hashtag okay. Restore the poem. This is the paddock cut that removes the poem.
Yeah, the paddock cut would definitely remove the poem, or at the very least, you know, at the beginning of some movies where they put, you know, like there's flashing lights and you know, this could bother epilepsy or something like that. Like I would put a warning for people at the beginning of the film, you know, about an hour and a half in, you're going to have to listen to some spoken word.
Just hey, listen it out though. There. For the future, for posterity's sake, that's your bathroom break, people. That's when you go potty. Especially if you had the privilege to ever see it in the movie theater again.
But one of the funny things to me is, like you were saying, where they're barely touching and barely holding hands and whatever, but he actually drops her at one point. Yeah, he does. Yep. Well, and she just goes careening towards the earth, and then he catches her.
My favorite part about that is he's like, this is like he just drops her and he's like, oh well.
Yeah, oops, sorry.
Guess I better fly down and get her. Yeah, and this doesn't scar her. This does not scar her.
No,
this is twice now this man has flown her.
As soon as, you know, he's back, she's fine again. I'd be like, dude, don't do that again, please.
Maybe, you know, can we go back to my house now?
Yeah, that was definitely not my favorite part of this experience. You know? I'm going to write a new fucking poem.
Yeah, that's what it's like. Did you even hear the poem I wrote you? I guess you can't read my mind.
Yeah. So.
Listen, though. All right, so is it poem or, I mean, if you had to, one element gets cut out forever, and I guess this isn't even a fair question considering what we spoken about before, but one element gets erased from Superman history forever. Is it the cellophane S or is it this poem?
No, it's the cellophane S.
Yeah, sure. It's the cellophane S.
Yeah. The cellophane S is a completely unforgivable sin.
It's the worst. No sense. Even as a child, I was like, the hell are you trying to tell me?
Yeah, what? Like, excuse me? This is a super-powered being. A little bit of cellophane is somehow going to like make a difference?
Saran wrap, baby. That's right. Yeah, seal it up fresh. Terrible. Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's in the sequel. Let's leave that one for the sequel. But after they do their little flyby with the poem and everything, he leaves her, which I think he leaves her really fast. I think it's great. He kind of just sets her down and is like, well, bye. Got stuff to do.
Yeah.
See you later.
You know? I never tell a lie. See you later.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
and then he shows up as his alter ego.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a little bit ironic, if you ask me.
It is.
You know, 10 seconds ago, he was saying never tells a lie, and then he shows up as a different person. He almost tells her, and it's one of those points where we were talking about his mannerisms and just what he does with his body, because you can see it. And it's such a great moment where he switches from Clark Kent to Superman,
and he stands up in his suit and tie, and you know he's got his glasses and hat on and everything, and. But yeah, and as soon as she comes out of the bedroom, he's like, just those subtle moments like that you don't see a lot in storytelling these days.
Yeah. And she's very smitten. She's, you know, she's supposed to be dressed for a date with Clark, but she's still in her nightie. And she says something like, that's Clark Nice or something like that, yeah, which is kind of funny.
That's Clark Nice.
That's Clark Nice.
Yeah. He has a smirk about that too. He knows what he did.
Yeah. Then the next scene that I think has any relevance is Lex Luthor. He deduces from a newspaper article that kryptonite is a thing, which always got is a little far fetched. He's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. It's shortcut for how, you know, insanely massive his genius is. And, you know, it gives us a way to see that, you know, he's operating on next level. He's not just your average human, but it is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I can suspend my disbelief I've heard some people, you know, critique that scene just because it is kind of it's out there, you know.
It is, but also it has Gene Hackman in it.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the scene. I love when Otis pushes the staircase and he's still up there, and you know, moves him over to the L's or something, and just leaves him hanging there. It's just a great scene. He says something like, "You know what the number 200 has in common with you and I? It's your weight and my IQ."
Yes. So good. Although I did make a note of body shaming.
Yeah, I know. It is kind of like, oh, well.
And then I was thinking, 200. I was like, oh, damn, Lex, I'd actually like to weigh 200 pounds. Thanks, bro.
Yeah, right. 200. That sounds good. Awesome. Yeah. Sounds about 5 years ago.
Yeah, right. But I always scratched my head. It took me a little bit older. I was a little bit older before I realized all of the levers in play in this plot and how it all leads to what we, you know, what we end up with. So Lex has, the U.S. government is testing two nuclear missiles, which apparently need to be loaded and armed in order to be a good test. I guess they're blowing them up in the ocean or something. One from the Army and one from the Navy or something to that effect. And, one of the things that doesn't quite work out, so you don't think about it too much. One of the things that doesn't quite work out is the timing of the hack jobs on the missiles themselves, where you know, where they break in and actually punch in the alternate coordinates or whatever it is they're going to do. They make it seem like it happens like within 10 minutes of each other, but these things are obviously miles and miles apart. But that leads to some interesting scenes where we exploit Miss Tessmacher to get the attention of the I love the general. I wouldn't ask my men to do anything I wasn't willing to do myself.
It's a little bit of a cringy joke.
It is a cringy joke.
It wouldn't play these days.
No, it would not play these days. And it, you know, if it weren't such a moment rooted in nostalgia for me, it would be even cringier. But even then, I was like, oh wait, ooh,
ooh, yeah, I can't. Can't get behind that one, General. Sorry.
Yeah, no doubt. Lex has, of course, you know, Otis is sent. I don't know. Why do you send Otis to do anything?
That's the only part of Lex's plan that doesn't make any sense. Why would you send Otis to do this? Like, you know, you give him all these numbers, which he can't remember, so he writes on his arm. You know,
he sweats off because he's a sweaty little dude.
Yeah, but, you know, still, I mean, you would think that Lex would just want to do it himself. Like, why don't you drive the car? You know, I'm going to go program the bomb. But, you know, it plays for a pretty comedic
part. Well, as I tell the kids sometimes, the movie has to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
It has to do that or the movie can't happen.
Yeah, exactly.
But we end up with two reprogrammed nuclear missiles.
Yep.
That now are going to go where Lex wants them to go. One is going to the San Andreas Fault.
Yeah.
And who is at the San Andreas Fault, though?
Lois Lane.
What's she doing there? Do you remember why she's there?
I honestly don't. She's
investigating the secret real estate investor who's buying up all the land on the other side of the San Andreas Fault, who just so happens to be Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
And Jimmy's there, of course, because Jimmy needs to take pictures of the Hoover Dam. I don't know how a junior part-time photojournalist gets assigned on the trip to this with Lois, but I guess Jimmy's just that good. He's moving up in the world.
Well, there's a throwaway line. Perry says that he sent him on his first away mission. His first away assignment. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, and we just real quick, we need to touch on what a gem Perry White is in this. He's one of the best Perry Whites who ever Perry Whited. I think who is the actor?
I don't know his name, but I do know that he cameoed in Zack Snyder's Justice League. Do you know that? He's the cop that Lois Lane is taking coffee to every day.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very cool. But yeah, so the real estate scheme being that Lex is going to blow up the San Andreas Fault, and California is going to fall into the Western Seaboard, and then Lex, oops, now owns all the beaches.
Yeah.
Except for what, Otisburg? Otisburg?
It's a small place. It's a small town.
Miss Dultor.
But
the other missile's going. Do you remember where the other missile's going?
The other missile is going to Mrs. Tex Mocker's
Hackensack, New Jersey. New Jersey. But my mom lives in Hackensack.
Yeah. I never understood why she would even go along with this whole thing, though.
Yeah.
She's
a damaged woman. Person.
I guess.
She's been through, she's been used and abused her life, obviously. You don't end up in the company of Lex Luthor by making good choices, usually.
But she doesn't even put up really much of an argument about it. It's just like, but that my mother's there. And it's just like, oh, well.
It still goes
along with the plan.
It's another great okay. And this is fodder in your argument that he is evil. But she's like, but my mother lives there, and he looks at his watch and goes, "It's so cold, man. It's so cold." he raises his eyebrow and goes, "Oh, damn, Lex. Yeah, so cold." But he's where does he go? Why does he leaves? Where is he going? We haven't got to the part where we have to lure Superman to Lex's lair, which he does with a literal dog whistle.
Yeah, which is honestly, it's pretty smart.
It's very clever. Another example of. The movie showing us Lex's genius rather than telling us how smart he is. They're showing us the things that he could deduce with his, his supercomputer level intellect.
I think they should have shown us all the dogs going crazy too.
We hear a couple of them barking, but them in the background.
You would think it would be like newsworthy. All the dogs in Metropolis suddenly went fucking crazy. We have no idea why.
And then for some reason after that, Superman drills a hole in the middle of the street. We don't know what's happening.
We've given up at this point. Apparently there's aliens.
Which I always thought was a really cool effect too. He's just like, I think though Superman probably would have looked for a manhole access rather than drilling a hole in the middle of the street. Though he will probably come back and fix it. It just seems a little too on the money there to just drill right down to where he is. But it's a cool effect, though. Cool effect.
And, you got to think, too. This is like Superman's first week of being Superman. He's probably going to be like, you know what? Next time I have to go to an evil lair, I'm not going to drill.
I'm going
to
take the stairs. I'm going to take the stairs.
Live and learn,
Listen, just because it's not called a Superman hole doesn't mean I can't use it.
So then he goes down to Lex's lair, and, he gets wrapped up in it, and he falls right into Lex's hands. I mean, Lex has this thing planned out pretty much to the T, even him knowing that it would piss him off. They're like, oh, you can't just hide that in lead,
Yep.
The whole thing, and he opens that crate, and it's kryptonite.
And what we have here, though, is even a rare moment of hubris from Superman. And it costs him.
Yeah.
Later on, but we've gone from the meek and bent over Clark, and we've seen him become more confident, and he's had nothing but success, even small little successes, including he dropped his girlfriend, but he caught her. And so he's had these successes as a hero that's built up his confidence, and so he goes down there. What can, almost without saying, what can some human have that I can't counter. And he goes down there maybe a little less humble than he ought, and he comes up short for it.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's a lesson that he learns, I mean, just because it's another human doesn't mean that they can't, get one over on you. He has to kind of slow his roll just a little bit. I think mm-hmm. he's had a good week as Superman. He's been saving people, he's been saving cats, and he's feeling good,
Following up with CPS on some child abuse interactions that he might have known about.
slice of humble pie.
The lead necklace bit or the kryptonite necklace bit always baffled me because it seemed too easy of a snare, but it got him. And just like the immediate exposure, some fast acting kryptonite.
Yeah, it is. Well, I would think at least in this universe, in the
first
in
exposure.
It's the first time he's ever felt anything like that. Yep. So it probably took him off guard just a little bit.
Put him on
and, you
his
know,
heels,
it,
yeah.
It might be the fact that he was so overconfident and walking in and he gets something for the first time that he's unprepared for. Like we've been saying this whole recording, it's a movie and it has to go this way so the movie can move forward. But I actually think that whole thing I have no problem with. I think that it would surprise the hell out of you if there was all of a sudden some rock
that's true. He's not met anything yet that he can't stand up against. And he wouldn't necessarily be concerned with the science of the remnants of his home planet being radioactively deadly to him. To the people who want to poo-poo how that works, we already talked about the yellow sun. Shut your face, okay? Yeah. I'm sure that's how it works. Also, did you spend 60,000 years floating through 5 galaxies to get here? No, you don't understand Kryptonite's journey. You haven't got that Kryptonite's lived experience, okay?
Yeah, and we haven't even gotten into, in the comic books, there's gold Kryptonite.
Yeah.
Where if he is exposed to it long enough, he loses his powers for good.
Oh.
That's extra spicy science for you.
See, right that's there. What I'm talking about, because, there you go. But, yeah, it brings him, it lays him up low, man. Lex just unceremoniously basically flushes him down the toilet.
Yeah. And, I feel bad for him at that point. Like, he's struggling in the pool, the in-ground inside pool that I wish I had in my evil lair. But he's grasping for air. He can't move. He's done. If it wasn't for Mrs. I can never say her name.
Miss Tessmacher.
Tessmacher. if it wasn't for her, if it wasn't for that chick, he would have been screwed pretty much.
Yeah. Well, and let's not give her too much. She is part and parcel to the evil plan. She knew this. She had no stakes in this until her mom was threatened, and she is 100% saving Superman to save her mom. She blackmails him or holds him up until promise me, because I know you never lie. I read in the newspaper that you never tell a lie. So promise me you won't, or promise me you'll save my mom, and I'll believe you because you never lie. And he's beholden to him on his own self. We come to find out that, Lex is dumb. Yes, Superman can't stop both of them. He's fast enough to stop both missiles, for the most part.
He stops it.
Yeah.
But, he has a little extra work to do on the West Coast.
Yep.
He has to make a little dam and, throw some boulders down. And
be part of a train track.
Yeah.
Which is still one of the coolest moments.
Yeah. Didn't you say your son loved that moment too?
He's he's just going to be the train track? Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. Because that's Superman. Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the still images that was in that magazine I had. And I studied that image for, I don't know. I was like, this is just watching the way he's steely eyed down. He's just staring the train down the track. He's like, all right.
Yeah,
then,
come on.
Why are you taking your time, bro?
Yeah, come at me, bro.
Come at me, bro.
I'm Superman.
he does manage to stop the big catastrophe in the moment, but we learn a little too late the fate of one Lois Lane.
Poor Lois,
Dude,
it's a good thing.
That's a brutal death.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
She gets
suffocated and crushed. I was watching that. I was like, oh, this is absolutely gruesome. They're not. I took myself out of the character for a moment and thought about the actors. And I was like, even if you're a stunt and, you know, the sense of being buried alive would just be overwhelming. I would be able to go through that. You know, that's
a terrible way to go.
Jimmy makes it out okay. He's going to be fine.
He's
going to be fine. One of the things that always comes back to me on this is the scale of the effects, like the rushing water. You know, it's not. You can tell. Your brain knows it's not that big, right?
It's models.
Yeah, it's out of the water is out of scale. It doesn't move like big heavy water moves. It moves like 5 gallons of water moves instead of like 5,000 gallons of water. But you know, you in the moment you're gonna buy it, because they don't. One of the good things about it is they don't spend a whole lot of time making you look at those effects. They just establish that these things are happening in a model kind of way. But in the end, we've lost Lois, and Superman has to go find her. And it is, I never paid attention before this last watch to how much he does with his face in this. And I think it's part of because, like, you know, I paid so much closer attention to all the other parts where they're building the relationship between Lois and Clark, to get to this. And he is beyond heartbroken. He is a broken being at that point. Like, I don't think that weight gets recognized enough, but Superman is at rock bottom and that very moment.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's very fine acting. I mean, he's silent for what seems like almost 30 seconds. I mean, you can see him just everything computing, he kind of has his Darth Vader moment.
Yeah.
You know, his, no!
Yeah.
But it's 10 times better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the face that he makes, and the way that they you know snap that pan out every time that the cry echoes and it takes you into space, and
yeah.
What do you think about the ending, though? What do you think about?
Well, I know the story behind the ending, so I kind of think it's a little. They just kind of shoehorned it in.
It was that was not meant to be the ending to this movie.
Exactly. It's supposed to be the ending to 2.
Yeah.
Originally, the way it was written was Superman felt bad for killing Zod. So he reversed time and put him in the Phantom Zone instead.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
That's the original ending of the second one. But they had already done the special effects. They had the world, you know, spinning backwards and then spinning forward. They already had that complete, so they kind of had to fit this into this movie once they fired Richard Donner.
Wow.
So they rewrote the ending. They rewrote that whole thing about Lois dying and everything like that. It feels forced.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the best ending.
So in the initial ending, then Lois didn't die and there was no reason to reverse time.
Yeah. In the original, now this is just, you know, from articles and stuff that I've read, but I've heard that she doesn't die. They basically just, you know,
him putting everything back is the end of the, him stopping the plan is the win. Right.
Is the win. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And if you think about it, at the end of this movie, he takes Lex and Otis to the prison.
After
and
he reversed time.
Yeah. The prison warden says, you know, the Earth is safe again. Thanks to you, Superman. But wouldn't he be like, hey, what the hell are you doing with these guys here? Because he just reversed time. So none of it would have happened.
Yeah.
You know, that's true. Like, and if Lex was smart and such a, you know, smart guy, he would have been like, yeah, give me a trial because I haven't done anything yet, you know.
That's true. Yeah, that's the part that never adds out. That's like, how does he only undo her death without undoing the bombs and everything else? Like, how does he only undo Lois's death and not the work that he did to prevent the thing that happened? That makes
it literally makes
It makes no sense because it wasn't meant to make sense because it wasn't, it's not how the story was supposed to go. And so as kids, we just poo-poo over it because it's Superman. He can do that.
Yeah.
But as, especially after you watch a lot of time travel movies as you grow up and, after Back to the Future and you go back and watch, you're like, well, now wait a minute.
Yeah, hold on a second.
Hold on
this
a second.
This does not add up.
These maths is bad, okay? Good. Okay, I'm not entirely insane, and there wasn't some magical piece I was missing other than, and it kind of all started to snap together when I found out that was the original ending to part two. I was like, oh, so they tacked it in. It kind of looks weird. I'm not saying that the idea of it would make any more sense in the context of Superman 2. If it were filmed as intended, because Superman flying around the Earth backwards doesn't equal time travel. I guess it does, because this is the movie telling us it does.
Yeah.
I guess I should take my own advice. Yellow Sun, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. You just kind of, there are some things in comic book movies that you just kind of have to roll with. And one of those things is if he flies fast enough, he goes back in time.
It's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't affect the planet at all. It's not going to affect the tides or anything like that. No one else remembers.
Yeah. Everything is fine. Everything but the nuclear bomb going off did not happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, he saved the planet. What are you complaining about?
Yeah, why are you complaining? Duh, God. You're right. I should hush. He saved the planet. Well, my gosh, we did it, Josh.
We did. We got through the whole thing, man.
We talked about Superman 1978, the movie. We made it through.
I had a good time.
I had a brilliant time. I had a blast, man. Of course I had a blast.
Hell yeah.
I'm looking forward to doing it again. Have we decided what the next part of Superman lore? Are we going right into the Donner cut of Superman 2?
No, I think we should go into Superman Returns. What I would like to do, and what we're going to do, dear listeners, is I want to focus on the different actors that played the character. Now, this one, was obviously Chris Reeve. We talked about his performance a lot. I want to move on to Brandon Routh and get your opinion on that.
Fantastic.
I think it's a high opinion,
by the way.
we can come back and we can have a whole sequels week or something like that.
Oh yeah.
But for this, I want to focus on the actors. So next episode, let's talk about Brandon Routh.
Love it. Gives me a reason to watch Superman Returns again.
It gives me a reason to watch Superman Returns because it's probably the one that I've seen the least.
I will be
so
clear.
I'm looking forward to it.
I do not need reasons to rewatch movies. I will watch any movie again because it happens to be today. I could have just as easily chosen to watch Superman Returns today just because I wanted to. So I don't need a reason, but I'm glad to have it.
Yeah, you definitely do. And so do you guys. If you're still with us and we haven't been rambling too much for you, thanks for listening. We'll be back with another episode of Superman Returns soon. I'm Josh Paddock. You can find me on Twitter at the PDOC, which is TheePeadoc.
Yeah.
Dan, where can they find you?
Hey, Dan Decker can be found at DanDecker under the moniker The Commodore. Reach out to me there and come and join in on all the Trek fun conversation. But here, it's always going to be about Josh, Dan, and Superman.
Hey, that's the title of our show.
He did the thing. He said the thing.
He did the thing.
That's right.
All right, guys. We'll see you. We're out of here. Hope you enjoyed yourself. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of Josh, Dan, and Superman, a Trek Nerd podcast. If you like what you heard and are feeling generous, why not head over to patreon.com/treknerd, that's TreknuRD, and click on the tier for our show. Remember, The more you contribute, the more sexually attractive you will be to the gender of your choice. That's just science, folks. All music for the show is provided by the immensely talented and exceptionally handsome Mr. Patrick Lee. He can be found on Spotify, Apple Music, or visit his website at patrickleemusic.org. Supporting independent artists like Dan, Patrick, and myself will guarantee longer, healthier lives. Again, that's just science. I'm Josh Paddock. We'll see you next time on Josh, Dan, and Superman.
Let me personally congratulate you on your completion of this achievement unit.